Welcome to the Maven's Keys to Financial Contentment, a personal guide to achieving your financial goals. In each episode, certified financial planner Dominique Henderson reveals insights to the underlying truths of how to be truly financially content by learning to put your money where your heart is. Dominique is the owner and founder of DJH Capital Management, LLC, a fee-only registered investment advisory firm offering comprehensive financial planning and wealth management services to entrepreneurs. You can learn more about Dominique and his firm by visiting their website, www.djh-capital.com, or on social media by the hashtag Financial Literacy Bootcamp. Now here's the Maven himself, Dominique Henderson.
Welcome to the Maven's Keys of Financial Contentment. I'm your host, Dominique Henderson, and today we're going to be talking about something that we talked about, I think episode 8, 9, 10, we talked about developing your money mindset. So I think I have a two-part, I think we can do this in two parts, decoding our money messages. So that is the title for, the working title, if you will, for what we're going to be doing, I guess, over the next 2 weeks, right? I think I can get this in 2 weeks. So that's really the goal. But anyways, the premise behind this is because I'm reading a book, The Seven Stages of Money Maturity. Let me slow down here. By George Kinder. Really, really good read so far. I have not gotten all the way through it because I'm reading a couple other things. But suffice to say, I want to share some of what I've been reading and how that involve, or how that, I guess, flows into episodes 8, 9, 10 about developing your money mindset. And so we're going to put that together in hopefully two episodes, like I said, decoding our money messages. And just kind of as a reminder, if you will, this podcast is mainly to help us work through the behaviors that we have around money, right? So I'm of the belief that you believe a certain way and then you behave the way you believe. And if that applies to money, then you're going to behave a certain way about money depending on your belief. If that depends on, you know, what you think about nature, what you think about, you know, spiritual things, what you think about life. I mean, it permeates all of our existence, that you basically behave the way you believe. And so this podcast is really designed to kind of uncover some of those belief systems that we have, you know, the software that we're running in our brains, if you will, because our brains are pretty much computers. So that's what this is really about. And if you want more technical stuff on how to invest your money or plan for yourself, you need to catch Friday's episode of Financial Literacy Bootcamp, and then we can probably have a conversation on the phone or via email or something like that. So just to kind of keep the mission straight and focused, if you will. All right, so I wanted to read a couple of things. I'm not going to do a whole lot of reading, and forgive me if I'm staring around and not looking you in the face, because I'm going to be doing some reading today. So let me give you the premise of the book. So the premise of the book of the seven stages of money maturity is George Kinder does what is called life planning, because it may not be that intuitive, but as financial planners, we deal with a lot of things that permeate all parts of your life just because we're dealing with your finances. We get into all kinds of things. And so he's come up with this rubric in several different ways, but essentially he is doing life planning. He's finding out how finances interweave into your life to make you have a better life, not just the shoring up the financial picture. It's shoring up all aspects of your life, knowing that those things permeate. And he's written a couple of books. This one that I'm reading right now, The Seven Stages of Money Maturity, take you through the stages that just about everybody has to go through before they become mature. Those seven stages are innocence, pain, adulthood, knowledge, understanding, vigor, vision, and aloha, right? And some of those are self-explanatory, but probably the one I need to unpack is the difference between knowledge and understanding. Knowledge and understanding is probably the difference between how you may look at how to do something on YouTube. Let's just say something real simple, like maybe changing the handle on your commode, on your toilet. You can look at somebody doing it, so now you have knowledge of how to do it. But the actual how and getting it performed by yourself, or getting yourself to accomplish that task, that's understanding. You don't have understanding until actually, you know, probably halfway through changing that handle, or when you're finished, you have then understanding. So understanding is more like applied knowledge, not just reading it and or looking at it. So the innocence part, though, is kind of interesting, because this is where it all starts. It starts sometimes in our childhood, how we start developing a money mindset, and we start wearing a particular lens when it comes to money. And he uses some phrases like, I'm just going to read from page 6 real quick, that most important, money maturity offers the ease and success that come from letting go of old painful patterns around money and learning how to create your own life based on a deepened understanding of your power and purpose. And so I like to call that basically financial contentment, right? A sense that you are now being fulfilled, and it doesn't have to do with money, right? You could be making great money. You could be making not so good money. You could be wanting to get to a spot where you make more. But the point is, money's not driving that. It's you're being driven by a deeper purpose for the reason why you want to use money to facilitate that purpose, right? So another thing he says is on that same page, as my clients and students came to terms with lifelong messages about money and let them go, they discovered the clarity to take practical steps like building a budget, creating an investment plan, or redirecting their careers toward work they truly wanted. So this is all the stuff that financial planners do, right? I think, unfortunately, and I'll take the blame for this because I've been doing this for 20 years. Our industry has painted a message that that most people that I come across view us as people that either want to sell you insurance or some type of product, or buy you stocks or give you stock tips. And financial planning is so much more than that, right? Because money is one of the last taboos in our society, and I've said that before, and there's a lot of strings attached to it, right? Emotional strings, how you do relationships, just how you view things, period. So there's some things that he asked in this book, and I'll probably do that in part two as I start talking about how we gonna divorce ourselves from those emotions. But I want to give you an analogy as we kind of wind it up for today. I want to keep these pretty close to 10 minutes or so. So in the lenses we wear, let me give you an analogy. So I used to wear glasses back in the day for corrective vision. I'm nearsighted. And then as time went on, I started to wear contacts, right? It was more trendy. But really the reason I started wearing contacts is because I played sports. And it was really hard to, you know, have the Kareem goggles, the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar goggles that were probably popularized when he started playing in the NBA and wearing them in the 70s. Like, those were out, but they were just so much more expensive than actually contact, than actually have contacts. So I got contacts, and they were a little bit more trendy. And then I started, as I got into adulthood, I upgraded to LASIK. So I guess my point in here is that the point that I've always needed corrective lenses because of, you know, pretty much all my life needed corrective lenses to basically correct what was wrong with my natural vision. And I've used several methods that ranged in cost and effectiveness along the way, obviously, right? And I guess what I'm trying to relay to you is we do this with money. Right. Just think about it. So based on some set of circumstances set of events or experiences, probably as early as childhood, likely as early as childhood, we've all had this perspective from which we view money. Right. It could have been an instance where maybe you realized that there was a financial constraint in the household, and you became aware of that, and how your mom and dad dealt with that, and the conversations they had with you around that. It could be that money was no object. You just, you know, you had a need and it was met, and you don't ever know how that need was met. But then you start to realize that money was around in order to meet that need. So you just never had any, you know, constraints around that. Right. And maybe you don't budget well now to this day because you just don't even know how to operate. There's a lot of different ways that you can come at this. And I don't think it's necessarily wrong or right. Right. It's just how you're built, brought up. But inevitably what has to happen is that you have to have, just like in my the glasses analogy and the context and then the LASIKs, I had this incremental progression, if you will, that my vision and the things I were able to do with corrected vision was steadily improved as I found better tools to deal with the fact that I needed corrected vision in the first place, right? And we have to do this with our perspectives on money. We have to find better tools. We have to, you know, continue to learn, continue to reach out to professionals like myself, continue to debunk the myths that surround our perspectives of money from early childhood until we get to adult. And that's kind of the premise of this book, of developing a maturity around money so that you actually see what it's used for. Like, I think what I said in episode 8, bringing this thing in for a landing, is that money is just a tool. It's just a proxy for a value transaction, right? So at the point that value is exchanged, whether you use money or back in the day when people bartered, or whether you use time, the point is, at the point of that value transaction, there's equal value being exchanged. Otherwise, you probably wouldn't do it, right? So when you go to the store to buy a gallon of milk, you know, the gallon of milk is $2.50. You give them $2.50. At that point of exchange, you both have equal value. The store has its $2.50, and you have your milk that you need. And that is, it should be emotionless, right? You had a need for milk. You went in and bought it. You paid what it cost. But for whatever reason, we start attaching emotions depending on what we buy with our money. And then we attach those emotions to the money. And that's where the problem comes in. So hopefully that's been helpful to, like I said, start to decode these messages we have around money. And we'll talk a little bit more about that next week when we start talking about our emotions, actually divorcing our emotions around the money. And I'll give you a little tips on how to do that. So like I said, I hope this has been helpful, and we'll be back next week to discuss a little bit more. Take care. Have a blessed day.